Accession number 27185, reel 23.
Major Barras, reel 23. You were saying that you saw the barrage balloons.
Balloons, yes, that's right. Yes, yes. But they, of course, they were silvery grey as well, so the whole sort of area was just grey and slightly misty in the distance. So the ships that we saw were sort of disappeared into the sort of fog in the early hours of the morning, that was.
Could you see the shore?
No, not at that stage, not at dawn. I think we couldn't get... We didn't see the shore for quite some time, actually. Well, eventually we found ourselves slowing down. Although we were supposed, I think, to have landed about 10 o'clock, we were still way out to sea at 10 o'clock. And we began circling. And each time we circled, we did a little bit nearer the coast. At some stage, the coast came into view. We could just see a strip of the coastline on the horizon with aircraft dipping and diving and going up. And then, of course, we caught sight of the Royal Naval ships on our flank and the flashes of their guns. I think there was a Warspite. Certainly Belfast was there, who was to support us later as well. And so were the battleships. I mean, they got a range of, what, 17,000 yards or something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah, with their 15-inch guns. And the Belfast, with, what, only 6-inch, could probably do 12. But their shells rumbled. They made a rumbling noise as they went over. They were strange. But, my God, the effectiveness of them when they reached the ground was terrific. Anyway, we could see their flashes from their guns on the flank. And then as we got nearer the shore... there was a lot of firing from landing craft as well, where sort of guns had been put in, and some of the SP guns were firing from their craft. And the idea, of course, of landing later, as we did, and not at dawn, as Rommel thought we might, was that Monty wanted light for a period. He wanted a rising tide, as we know, but he also wanted light beforehand to give the defence is a good pasting with bomber command and follow-up aircraft and from artillery as well. And that was a risk he took, that they might see us first, but it paid off in the end.
We would have a superiority of firepower, wouldn't we?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Battleships and other craft.
Yes, yes.
So it would be to our advantage to be able to see what was going on.
Yes, that's right. And then there were sort of rockets being fired from some of the craft. They had a name. I can't remember what it
hedgerows.
Was. Hedgerows, that's right, yes. I remember seeing them going off. But still we didn't start to move towards. Gradually we got nearer and nearer to the coast and the outline became clearer and everything. And it wasn't till about 12, I think, that we suddenly started to gather speed and turn around and started moving towards the coast. Mm. We could see the outlines of Lahamel, where we were supposed to be landing, and we could see there was quite a bit of activity around there. But we didn't go there.
What were the signs of activity? What could you actually see?
Well, smoke and black smoke coming up.
Yes.
And there were sort of on the flanks, there were sort of tanks moving around, but I couldn't see any soldiers or anything at that distance.
It was just the smoke and the armoured vehicles.
Yes, that's right. It was obvious that something was going on there.
Yes.
And in the end, they put us down about nearly a mile away from our original landing point.
That would have been to the east.
To the east, yes, right. Yeah. Yep. Yes. Yep. Towards, we were still in 50-div area. But of course, it would have been towards what 3-div on our, or was it Canadians? Canadians on there.
The Canadians, third Canadian was landing on Juno.
That's right.
So,
yeah.
But you would have been.
No, we weren't anywhere near them actually.
If you were a mile from Lahamel,
yes,
roughly speaking, to the.
It was about 15. It was about 1,500 yards.
Yes.
Nearly a mile.
Then you'd have been really midway between the 231 Brigade area and the 69 Brigade area.
Yes.
Between. Le Hamel on the one hand and Vers-sur-Mer on the other.
Yeah.
So it'd be somewhere like that.
Yes, that's right. Yes, yeah. I'm sure you're right. That's right.
How did you get ashore then? How was the landing carried out?
Well, we couldn't get right into the dry... It wasn't dry-shod by any manner of means. I think we had water up to our waists, more or less. Because I know that stuff I had in my trouser pockets was affected. We had Mae West on. And we had bicycles. These sort of airborne bicycles which you can fold up. Now, I'm not sure whether we all had bicycles or whether it was just a company who were going to lead the advance after we'd assembled. But we all waded ashore. And, of course, we were in a strange territory. It's not something we'd looked at. Not only were we a mile away from our assembly area, but we were also 2 hours late. So,
Well, could you tell me what you were actually carrying? Were you carrying a bicycle yourself?
I don't remember. No, I'm sure I wasn't. I think it was only a company who had the bicycles. And, of course, I wouldn't have, because we had, by the time we got to Buho, we had our F echelon there, which would have been a jeeps and carriers.
But what did you actually carry on your, you know, on your person when you were going down the...
A small haversack.
Mm. What was in it?
Well, we had our 48-hour rations, which were dehydrated stuff to be cooked over a little Tommy cooker, you know, with the spirit.
Yes.
Underneath spirit. Yeah, that's right. So it didn't produce any smoke or anything. Probably a spare pair of socks, I think. Didn't have my pajamas, I'm sure. I really can't remember what I had in there.
What weapon were you carrying?
I was carrying a Sten, which I quickly exchanged for a Schmeitzer later when a German was kind enough to give it to me. Stens weren't really reliable. They were made quickly and rather ad hoc, and they did tend to jam. So that's all I... Yeah.
You were travelling very light indeed, weren't
yes,
you?
Yes, very light, yes. We were all very light, except those who had to carry Brens, and thank God the anti-tank gun wasn't there anymore. The anti-tank rifle, I beg your pardon, yes, the anti-tank rifle had gone, thank God.
You had the Piat, presumably.
We had the Piat instead, yes, with somebody had to carry the bombs and a carrier behind, number two. And when we got ashore, I can see German prisoners there sitting around, looking thoroughly dejected. There was a fair amount of activity. There must have been the beach group, I expect, who were getting things organised there. One or two drowned tanks. There were still some of the obstacles sticking out of the water. And, of course, coming in on the low tide with the rising tide, that gave another advantage, able to get at the obstacles before they were covered by the sea. So, anyway, we made our way across the beach. We were directed by the beachmaster. And we found at the back there was a big minefield, which the Germans had laid, but it was surrounded by barbed wire with Achtung Minen. Notice there, welcome to the British. But the sappers had already been there, cleared a pathway right through and taped it. So we were able to go straight through it and out the other side.
Was there still fire on the beach when you landed, mortar fire or...
I don't remember anything going on there, no. No. There was a lot of sniping when we were going round the back. There were some of bullets, and we got some casualties from sniping. And there were some 88s up on the hill behind the Hamel, which were still firing, I think. Mm. But I don't remember anything big in the way of mortars or...
You said the German prisoners were sitting dejected. Were they under guard, or were they just sitting?
Oh, I just can't. I'm sure they had a guard there, yeah. Mm. I'm sure some of them was looking after them. They weren't going anyway, really. They were able to have been shipped off in returning LCAs, as were the wounded, of course.
Did you actually recognise the terrain when you landed on the beach from the briefings you'd had on the model and with the photographs?
Well, it was also straightforward, really. We just went through the minefield, and turned right, and then made our way along towards behind the Hamel.
Yes.
There were still, I don't think there were any German positions still on the beaches along there. I think they'd all been seen to by the forward brigades. But there was a certain fair amount of sniping going on. I know we got several casualties, which had to go back in LCAs before we moved off even. So eventually we got to Buho, where we married up with our...
Do you have any idea of how long it took you to get to...
I haven't really. We went at speed. I mean, we really got moving. Yeah. I think we did it in about 20 minutes or so.
Were you moving tactically at that stage, or were you just piling off the
beach? No, we're just piling off by companies.
Yes.
And getting down there as fast as we can, or we could. We weren't expecting to meet any enemy. Obviously, we must have been briefed on the beach, I expect, by somebody, or we got the information. We just made for our assembly area as quickly as we could.
Yes.
Where we took off, I think we took off, we had still had our May West on, we took them off in the assembly area there and dumped them. And then married up with F Echelon transport, luckily.
Did you have to secure Le Buho?
No.
So was your F Echelon there ahead of you?
No, I don't think so. I think it more or less arrived, well, soon after we got there, when we closed up.
Were there any...
Because you've got to remember, we all came off different landing craft.
Of course.
I mean, I was all right with my company and half somebody else's company, but that half company had to marry up with its other half company coming off another LCI.
To get reorganised.
So there was quite a bit of, I wouldn't call it disorganisation, but there was quite a bit of reorganising to be done before we could all get into our proper groups and ready to advance.
Were there any local French civilians around?
No, nothing. No, I didn't see any. I think they'd all gone to ground. I would
probably
have done if I'd been a Frenchman. Yes.
Yes.
Go down where the wine is.
So you got to Le Buho.
Yeah.
The F Echelon turned up.
Right.
And you got yourself married up with them, reorganised. What happened after that?
Well, after that, we got the... we then started to carry out what we had gone over there for. Which was to make for Bayeux, or Bayeux, as French insist I call it, and they're quite right, of course, it's their place, not mine. And I remember that A Company started off first on bicycles and carriers, and they went ahead and the rest of us followed. Saint-Sulpice was the place we were aiming at, which was about 5 miles away.
Inland towards Bayeux.
Yes.
So that would be...
There's a big it's a crossroads we had to... to grab first. We weren't sure where the enemy were, you see, at this stage, so we really were going in sort of battle formation. That's right.
What sort of battle formation did you have? What was the company layout for this advance to contact?
Well, we weren't spread across the country. We were in file.
You were in file.
I mean, we were behind one another. We went up this dusty road, but we were depending on A Company who went ahead.
So they were ahead.
Yeah.
And you were following up as rapidly as you could. And
that's right.
You were on foot, weren't you?
Yes.
Rather than...
Yeah, I don't think we're on bicycles. The funny thing is, I just don't remember.
So was it the case then that you really effectively got platoons in column, but... moving in file on either side
and
of the road.
And they'd been moving in file on either side of the dust. It was a dusty little road, actually. It was, with open on either side, I do remember that.
Yes.
For quite some time, and the SWBs were having a sort of a battle over there on the right somewhere. We could hear sort of rattling
and
machine guns.
Borders then, they'd have been, on if you were moving down towards Saint-Sulpice.
Yeah. They were on the right somewhere.
Yes. You'd have gone via Rees.
Yes, right.
And they would have been moving through La Rosière and mainly on Bessin.
Yeah, probably. I don't honestly know.
Do you know how far away from you there?
Oh, not very far. Not very far. About a mile, I suppose, at the most. Yeah.
Yes.
We could hear the rattle of machine guns over there.
Yes.
And they were using their mortars, I think, because there was certainly amount of mortar fire going on. And then the Gloucesters, we didn't come across the Gloucesters at all, but I think they were on our left.
Mm.
I wouldn't be sure about that, or whether they were in reserve or not, I don't know.
Well, they'd have been moving down if so either... Possibly they'd have been following up behind either...
I would have thought so. That's the normal thing, to keep behind.
They'd keep one back, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yes. Yes.
So it'd be two battalions forward, one battalion back.
That's right.
On brigade scale, and
yeah.
then your company moving down that minor road, going
yeah.
through Rees central piece, and then into by you itself,
yeah.
Saint-Vigo-le-Grand.
Yeah. So we arrived, we all closed up on Saint-Sulpice, which was really just a crossroads, with I can remember a farm there. It was a hamlet, very small. There were only a few two or three houses there. And this great big crucifix, I remember, on the crossroads. And when we got there, it was still daylight. And the CO sent patrols out towards Bayeux to find out what was going on. And it was getting dark when they came. I know it was getting late when they came back. And they said, well, the Germans were still there. They didn't know in what strength, but they got fired on. There was an anti-tank ditch there as well, which they found. And it was decided that it'd be not much point in trying to launch an attack that night, but we would do it in the morning, in daylight, because our object or objective had been Bayeux, but not necessarily on D-Day itself. I think we've been giving latitude for D plus one.
So you got through Saint-Sulpice, past the Calvaire at the crossroads.
No, we got to Saint-Sulpice. We stayed there the night.
Oh, right. But where are the Germans? And were they just beyond?
Germans
there?
Are in Bayeux.
So you got
some of them. We didn't know how many.
You got to Saint-Sulpice, and then there's another, I suppose, a couple of kilometres.
Yeah, we're very near. One of the things I can remember whilst we were there before it got dark was seeing the spires of Bayeux Cathedral. Sort of sticking up beyond over the trees.
Yes.
And then, of course, darkness fell, and we dug ourselves in round there because we didn't know where the Germans were. We were spread out on company areas. And then the German Luftwaffe started. They were coming up from local airfields. And we could hear them groaning up as they climbed up, very near to us, straight over our heads, to go out and bomb the shipping. Mm-hmm. And then there was, as they got over the shipping, we could see a terrific display of tracers and things going up in the air, and explosions and bangs. And we learnt later after the war that they were probably dropping magnetic mines as well, which were delayed. Delayed booby trapped and delayed fuses on them, which caused a big problem.
You were saying that you could see the spires of the
cathedral
beyond the trees.
Just poking up above the trees, yeah.
Well, how far could you see from those positions where you dug in for the overnight?
Well, I could. We just had these trees in front of us.
Yes.
And I just remember I could see the spars of the... Mm. I think it was two or three spars they've got.
Triple,
yes, that's right.
But I mean, did
we
you
We just
have,
see the tips, you see, of the top.
But did you have good lines of sight from your...
We could see down the road, yes.
Yes.
I mean, the trees were up, you know, so up there. But as it got dark, we couldn't see very much anyway.
How long did it take you to dig in for that overnight stop? From the moment you said, OK, chaps, dig in and settle down for the night.
Well, luckily, if we got our shovels up from the F echelon,
because
those trenching tools were quite really useless, quite honestly. I don't know, I suppose you could dig, depends whether you were going to be there permanently as a defensive position.
But if you were just there for...
Or were just there for protection.
Yes.
I don't know, you could probably dig, two of them could probably dig, it depends on the soil, of course.
Mm. I mean, where you were that night at Bayeux?
I couldn't remember, but about an hour, I should think, you could get down to a reasonable, if provided the earth, I can't remember what it was like there, but if the earth is reasonably soft and you can get down quickly, I mean, you could get a good trench done in an hour with two of them, just a slit trench. So, as I say, we stayed there the night listening to the German
Was there any patrol activity or anything?
Yes,
going
well,
on?
We did. As I say, we sent a patrol out to Bayeux, and of course we had patrols, standing patrols out beyond us.
Yes.
The whole night.
Just to give any
warning of Germans coming our way. Yeah.
Were the enemy doing anything?
No, they didn't. No, nothing at all.
Did you have contact with the battalions on either side of you?
Don't know. I don't think we did. I didn't personally. Battalion headquarters, our battalion headquarters, was probably in touch with the battalion headquarters, yes. The SWM in Gloucester's, and of course on the rear link to brigade.
Mm.
But as a company commander, unless I was on the flanks and we were close together, I wouldn't have had much contact.
Mm.
Or any.
So you settled down for the night.
Yeah.
You got ashore, got inland, within sight of the objective, and you were dug in. And had your company suffered any casualties?
Yeah, we'd had one or two wounded from snipers.
Mm-hmm.
Only, I think we had a couple, I can't remember exactly how many. I can remember the bullets sighing overhead as they were spent, who knows, off sometimes. Because it wasn't all just sniping, there were Spandaus working as well.
Yes.
And of course, if you've once heard a Spandau, you always recognise it with its brrrp. And that's what we learnt. I learnt from that that you, when a gun goes off, you hear the crack of the bullet over your head, and then the thump comes from the weapon. So we always taught the soldiers to listen for the thump and not worry about the crack.
Yes.
Because then you could locate the weapon where it was coming from more closely. As somebody, I think I mentioned before we left for France in 1939, who had some experience of warfare, said, "It's all right, lad, you don't hear the ones that hit you. If you hear a crack, you know you're all right." But do you hear this crack, 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 crack as the bullets went over, and then thump, 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 brup, brup from the Spandaus. So there was a little bit of firing going on, but once we got through and into Saint-Sulpice, there was nothing around there at all, and we got no interference.
So you had a quiet night then?
Had a quiet night, except for the droning of the German bombers. We might have complained to them about it, I think, keeping us awake.
How did things go on the next morning when the light started to...
Well, the next morning we were an advance towards Bayeux was set up with the Sherwood Rangers in support. We had our squadron of Sherwood Rangers with us, and we started moving. I cannot remember in what formation or what it would be, but we'd advanced to contact, so therefore we'd have had a company up front. Probably A Company was still up in the front. And they would have been deployed. So if they hit the enemy, they were immediately available to return the fire. And we just walked into Bayeux. They're gone. No problem at all. The only trouble we had was one of our carriers carrying the signal officer, Captain Dickie Hearn, blew up on a mine. And I believe he lost a leg. He was one of our first bad casualties, you know.
Do you remember which side of Bayeux that was? Was it the north side where you entered, or...?
It was more to the left we were, to the east.
Towards Saint-Vigor?
Well, I can't remember the names, but it was more towards the... We skirted... where's the sea? Down here. We skirted Bayeux this way. We went into it on the suburbs on this side.
Yes.
And then came out this side, but we didn't go into the centre.
So you're on the left segment.
We were on the left segment, yes.
But went out across the road to Caen, the N13.
Yes, and we finished up on the road to Saint-Lô.
Yes.
Eventually. So the Rangers were with us, and they did some wrecking around in Bayeux as well.
Mm.
And I remember we went down a railway track. I believe some of the roads were blocked or something, not by the Germans, but it was definite they'd gone. There were no signs of civilians anywhere.
Mm.
They were still held down.
In hiding.
Yes. Mm.
Did the Sherwood Rangers, were you intimately mingled with them? Were you?
Oh yes, we got to know them. Got to know them.
On this advance, did you have platoons walking alongside the Sherman tanks, or were the tanks going ahead of the infantry?
I think we were entirely separate on this particular. Yes, because it wasn't. You see, it wasn't a fixed attack as such.
Yes.
It was merely advance to contact.
Yeah. And there was no contact.
And I think the arrangement was at the end that we would go our various ways and use the Rangers' mobility to go off and see if they could see anything.
Because, I mean, normally tanks would be rather shy of going into a built-up...
Well, I know, yeah. But they did on this occasion. In fact, they've got a... outside the museum in there, there's a memorial to the Rangers.
Yes.
And we are going to have one there too. Which is going to be, we've gone into it all, and it's going to be next to theirs. And it's going to be dedicated next June, 7th of June. On
the day you arrived.
That's right. Because we felt, you know, we couldn't leave it all to them.
No. Indeed.
And at last, someone has thought about it, and so we've got one there. It's going to be dedicated to all the whole regiment and to all those who fell throughout the whole campaign. It was more or less a sort of local memorial. It's going to be a local memorial. So I'll have to go. I should be going across to that, undoubtedly, because there's not very many of us left who actually landed on D-Day. So anyway, we went there, and I remember going down a railway track, and then we finished up on the southwest side of Beria on the Sandlow Road, and there we dug in. My company was assigned to straddle the road.
Yes.
And I had my headquarters. There was a little village there. Began with an M. I don't know.
I think it probably goes off that map because heads southwest, doesn't it?
Yes. And when it was quite near to Bayeux. Anyway.
That road, I mean, the railway track is obviously the one that goes from on and then on through Bayeux.
Yes.
There's only one railway running through Bayeux.
Yes.
So that would be that.
But it was definitely the Sandlow Road. Oh, here it is.
Yes.
That one. That's where I have my headquarters and the farm there.
Yes. So this is the hamlet of Montmirel.
Yes.
And there was a Saint-Louis.
Yeah.
On and there was D512.
That's right.
57.
Whatever the number.
D572. Yes. Yeah. It's a little farming hamlet, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
And there was quite a nice, not the usual sort of peasant sort of rough looking farm. It was a well kept big farm. And I had my headquarters in the outbuildings.
Were the owners in residence? Or,
yes, they were. Yeah,
they were.
Yeah.
So you've got some local.
Oh yes, they were. Well, actually, after Bayeux had been taken, and the next day they began to come out of their houses.
Yes. How did they greet you when you arrived there at? Their house at Montmirel.
Oh, very cordially. I can't remember whether they got excited at being liberated.
Yes.
But he was a farmer and his wife and a family.
Were you in contact with the enemy at that point?
Well, we did have some contact. It was rather amusing, actually, because we'd been there. We were there 2 days altogether.
Yes.
And I can't remember when it was, but our first engagement was a van coming, a camouflage van came down the road from the direction of the enemy.
Yes.
And when it got close to us, we could see it was a German vehicle. So it was given a blast on the Bren gun. It immediately stopped dead in its tracks. And the fattest German I've ever seen in my life scrambled out and dived into a ditch the other side. And I can still see his sort of grey uniform, big fat bottom as it disappeared into the ditch on the other side. We never saw him again.
You didn't manage to catch him then?
No, we didn't bother.
How far was he when you brewed up his van?
Well, it was just on the